When the going gets tough, the tough start a business. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. During the worst of the pandemic, people got resourceful. Many started new businesses, 552,000 new businesses in just July of 2020. That was the highest monthly number in the Census Bureau's records. Even now, people are still starting new businesses at a historically high rate. Last month, business applications increased 4.5% from the month before. Marketplace's Henry Epp has more.
When an economic crisis hits, entrepreneurship often jumps, says Samiksha Desai, a professor at Indiana University.
That is often, not always, but often driven by people who may be exiting the wage labor market, right? So perhaps pushed from unemployment into self-employment.
But even with unemployment at historic lows, people are still starting a lot of new businesses, says John Haltewanger, an economics professor at the University of Maryland.
Something's become unleashed in this period of time where there's lots of experimentation going on.
Haltewanger says it's hard to know why, but he sees two trends. One, more businesses in the service sector are starting up outside city centers, catering to people working from home.
We see this hollowing out of the downtown area and this donut effect in terms of the business formation in the surrounding areas.
Two, there are more tech startups. Some of that could be workers laid off from big tech companies. The Haltewanger says it's too soon to know for sure. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
We are on our way, slowly, to summer. And summer is internship season. Employers expect to increase their summer intern numbers by almost 10% compared to last year. That's according to a recent survey from the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Why, you ask? Recruitment, Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
19-year-old Lexi Harrell is studying human capital and labor relations as a junior at Michigan State. This summer, she'll have her first ever internship. It's in human resources at the insurer Allstate. Her goal is to learn about both HR and insurance.
I just want to be someone that people can ask questions to instead of being the person that's always asking questions.
Employers view internships as an opportunity to ask questions of potential workers. Many say it's an integral part of their recruiting strategy. Mary Gatto with the National Association of Colleges and Employers says lots of internships result in job offers. And of those interns who accept?
The retention rates for employees who served as interns are higher at the one-year and the five-year mark than those who did not.
Gatta says internships give workers a chance to get a sense of a company's culture. That comes through even in a hybrid setting, where workers are in the office sometimes and sometimes remote, a reflection of the way lots of office jobs currently are. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Republican members of Congress are pushing for more work requirements in programs like food stamps and Medicaid. Proponents say these requirements can help fix labor shortages and federal deficits. But there's another aspect that gets less attention, the private for-profit industry that's grown up around enforcing welfare work requirements. That's what the new season of Marketplace's investigative podcast, The Uncertain Hour, is all about. And the host, Chrissy Clark, is here to talk about it. Hi, Chrissy.
Hey, Sabri.
So you're calling this season the welfare to work industrial complex. What do you mean by that?
Right. So over the years, we've all heard politicians talk about the dangers of so-called welfare dependency. But there's this little known group of million and billion dollar corporations that some argue have cultivated their own cycle of dependency on the federal government. These are corporations that have largely built their business on enforcing work requirements in welfare to work programs.
You spent some time inside these for-profit welfare businesses, getting to know them, getting to know their business models. How was that?
Yeah. So the thinking behind putting private companies into this role is that they would do a better job than government in getting people into jobs because they already have a sort of business mentality. So I talked to this guy named Peter Cove, who founded one of these welfare-to-work companies called America Works. He told me he sees his business as having two main customers, the government, who pays his company to run welfare offices, and employers, who might hire people on welfare. So I asked him how the welfare recipients themselves fit into his business model.
I think of them more as the product of our company. I mean, they're inventory for us.
How much do you make off your inventory?
We make enough to stay in business. Our revenue runs between $40 and $50 million a year.
And that's just one company of many, huh?
Yeah, and we found that over the years, these companies have raked in hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars running these welfare-to-work programs and putting welfare recipients into all kinds of federally mandated work activities. And critics say these companies are getting paid a lot of money without much to show. Often they're just funneling people into low-wage jobs that don't get them out of poverty or really pay them enough to support a family without having to keep relying on government assistance.
What do people who have been on welfare and have turned to these privatized welfare companies, what do they say?
So some people I've talked to have had good experiences, found good jobs, but others felt like the companies didn't have their best interests at heart. So we wanted to look up close at this privatization of welfare, how companies are profiting off the work requirement policies that we already have, and how this policy of coerced work is affecting people in all kinds of jobs everywhere.
That's Chrissy Clark, Marketplace senior correspondent and host of our podcast, The Uncertain Hour. Their new season just launched. Episodes come out every Wednesday. Thanks so much, Chrissy.
Thank you, Sabri.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.